they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole.
Get we found. Ready. It's time again to venture down the rabbit hole into the world of cybersecurity. You're plugged into the podcast for security leaders and practitioners with a business sense. Prepare for unique interviews, insights, and practical advice that makes your job just a bit easier. And now, please welcome your guides on this adventure, James Jardine and the White Rabbit, Ruffalos.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome live if you're watching us. Welcome down to Security Rabbit Hole to yet another edition of the Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast. This is Raph. Underneath me is Mr. James right there.
How's it going? I'm actually to the side of you on my view, so it's hard to know who,
I don't care.
Who's where.
My view is what streams, so you're right
just introduced
here.
Anton, so that's okay.
I am in a Challenger's Quadrant. I'm sorry.
Yes.
He came to me naturally.
There's Anton. He's in the bottom right-hand corner.
What?
And
I'm above the line in my view. I don't want to be in the bottom left. What are you talking about?
Bottom right. You're bottom right.
Okay, bottom right, I'll take. Fine.
You're a visionary but no ability to execute, which basically makes you an analyst.
Thank you. I'll take that. That's a fun quadrant.
And in the top right-hand corner, Jeff Collins. Mr. Jeff, introduce yourself.
I'm in the top right. This is a first of my life. This is outstanding. I'm Jeff Collins. Thanks, everybody.
Jeff is nicely Jeff has the world's fastest IP over carrier pigeon connection money can buy, as you can see by the amazing video quality. But that's okay. I think he's trying to be anonymous too. So there is that.
It does look a little blurred out. It's funny because It didn't look like that before.
It's cloudy. Record. Maybe it has to do with cloud.
I'm telling you, IP over carrier pigeon.
But this joke is so 90s. I'm afraid nobody but us would get it.
That's okay.
Because I think the protocol was defined something in 1998, if I recall correctly, or a long time ago.
Something like that. Yeah. All right. So, folks, this episode, I thought I'd do something a little, sometimes this industry can get a little frustrating. And I thought, what better way to blow off steam than invite some friends onto the show and do a two truths and a lie sort of themed thing. So we're going to talk about product categories, products in the security space that are overhyped, overmarketed, sometimes true, sometimes just flat out bull beep, and sometimes, maybe actually useful. So guys, I'm going to ask that you guys are my panel today. So I'm going to ask the panel, where do we want to start? And maybe I start with Anton because he's the recovering analyst. Anton, where do you see? Let's do this way. Let's start with the crap and then find our way to like things that are useful. So let's start with what is the in your opinion, the most overhyped, under-delivering market segment in cyber right now?
So I have an answer, and it's going to be like a cliche, predictable answer. But before I give my answer, I'm going to say that deep in my heart, I don't think there is any category in security that got funded that doesn't provide any value to anybody. I think there's always a tiny sliver. Like if you're a founder, you met your five friends and they found your idea to be awesome. And you would have at most four clients because one didn't have the money. So I'm willing to go and be contrarian here and say that no security category is absolutely useless for everybody. Even XDR. Even XDR. And that is my answer.
Wow.
As the most over-marketed, over-hyped category of the moment. And at the risk of being somewhat self-promotional, on our podcast, we just had somebody who really, 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 really hated XDR. And we just could not figure out an episode title because it was always curse words, curse words, curse words. And so ultimately we ended up naming it more politely, but we all felt like we chickened out.
Jeff, thoughts?
Well, Anton chose the best category already, which is super XDR, extra XDR, XDR, EDR, whatever name of the month.
Next-gen XDR.
Next-gen XDR. Super next-gen XDR. So those are all Those are all super great categories. But we also have others. You know, we have the whole world of literally every correlation platform on the planet. Those are hyped up to the ends of the earth. You can choose any one of those. Whether it starts with a sim or some advanced correlation platform that runs on top of a cloud provider, whatever it is, all of them are basically in the same boat. We can also go down the whole realm of SOAR platforms. So we've got all kinds of elements here that we can talk about for today. So lots and lots of fun.
James, where's your head at?
It's funny he said SOAR because I was sitting here thinking the whole time. I was trying to remember what it was called. But I was going to say SOAR.
Come on. You forgot SOAR? Literally, yeah, this right? acronym was crafted to be memorable and then meaning was added later. I was there when it was being done. So how can you forget? It has memorability built in.
I remember the podcast we did on it too. And then I still was like, what the heck was that called?
I mean, it's excusable if you forget, if you can't use DSPM from DDR. It's fine, but SOAR. How?
Yeah. So I was gonna go that route too. But I wanted to agree that, you know, not just because something isn't across the board valuable doesn't mean that there's not something that is valuable to somebody. And so much of it becomes the implementation of how are you using it to get what you need done. You know, I mean, how many places say like, oh, we're the one solution you need, but you know, you still need 15 other solutions because they really don't do what they said they did, or you're a use case that doesn't cover what they're trying to do and you need that little piece. So I agree. I don't think there's anything out there that's necessarily a nobody could ever use this, but I think we look at everything holistically. We don't look at everything as a, oh, okay. That company right there really is successful using this, but guess what? That's not going to work for you because of your use case.
So maybe I've said this poorly. Maybe it's not complex, things that are completely useless, but things that are just so dramatically over-marketed, over-hyped for the actual value that they deliver. And to that end, I can't believe neither of the three of you, especially Mr. Collins there, I'm disappointed. None of you have said zero trust.
Because you couldn't define it. To criticize something, you have to define it. Like, imagine you're trying to shit. Sorry, can I say? Okay. So imagine you're trying to crap on zero trust. Where do you crap? How do you aim? I think we killed Raph, but okay.
Well, zero trust is everywhere. So anywhere, Anton. It's everywhere and nowhere all at the same time. So you can't miss it.
You just feel like this is why we invite Anton to the podcast. This is why we invite
you. Can't miss it. Okay, fine. Now it's stuck in the head. You can't miss it.
So, look, guys. All right. So I SOAR. Yep. I'm with you there.
Actually, ML infused goodness. I don't know how nobody wants to take a shot at ML anything. Nobody? Anybody?
It's like picking on, you know, the fish floating upside down in the barrel and you're like, I'm gonna shoot that.
I got you. Yeah.
I feel like it's almost like an undefined two of nobody knows what it means. Yeah, fair point. Right? I mean, say
can
almost
we just say
with
algorithms?
AI.
Can we be okay with algorithms? Can we just I feel like this is the industry, and it works this way in politics too, but we're not going to go down that route, where we have to keep inventing new and scarier, more sensationalist words to effectively mean the same thing. Because people in our industry get bored, and they're like, oh, you know, zero trust. Yeah, it's been around a couple of years. What's next? You're like, well, we haven't actually done that. Mm-hmm. Like, we're halfway to defining it. But like RSA, guys. XDR and zero trust, everybody was selling it. Every vendor I went and talked to, everybody was selling it. Jeff and I walked around for a bit. We're like, XDR, XDR, XDR. Like, they can't possibly be. There was a former, and I'm not going to name the vendor because it's too obvious, but former behavioral analytics company, right? That suddenly was an XDR that had like XDR all over their booth. And I'm going,
yep.
What?
Well, and if you think about what drives all this, let's just be honest, what drives it is investments. Because everybody has exactly the same thing within this regard. So all these players that we're talking about, they all have the same thing. And so what they do is they come up with a new verbiage for it. They get venture capital firms to go spend money on them, i.e. AI, ML, behavioral analytics. I mean, we can just go down the whole line. Then we package it in a three-letter acronym. Then everybody goes out and spends a fortune on it. And then every company on the planet buys it. It's like the endpoint of the month club. You know, you choose whoever you're going to have this month. And it's just like going to McDonald's. This week, I'm going to have a Big Mac. And next week, I'm going to have a Whopper. It's the same idea. Just swap them out. One right after another. Good to go.
Let me ask you a strange and possibly serious question. And I really mean it this time. I'm not setting up for a joke. So who cares if we're going to assign blame for it? And the blame is maybe like three choices, vendors, investors, clients. Who is kind of more at fault? And let me explain that. I just want to like ride on the point that Jeff made. Like, sorry, for example, DLP. Now, let's take a time machine to 2008. Somebody invented DLP. DLP gets sold to people. DLP doesn't work too well. And then now you have choices. You're going to invent an acronym, say DDR or a random other new acronym. You're going to say DLP 2.0. Or you're going to say, hey, guys, I have DLP. It just finally works. I don't think the third option will get funded. But whose fault is it? Is it the CISO's fault who would not buy DLP, even from a vendor who says, ours actually works? Is it the investor who would not give money? Or is it the vendor who is just creatively naming stuff? Like, I don't, deep in my heart, I don't know. We're used to blaming the vendors. I'm not sure it's only the vendors.
I think there's enough blame to go around. But I don't know the investor. Maybe that's one for you, Jeff. But I don't know the investor community well enough, to be accurate there. But I feel like you can make up something as long as it seems scary and or mystical, magical, never seen before. Like if it's never been used before, somebody will throw $100 million at you. And I think in the race to do something unique. And frankly, you forgot the fourth category, which is the analysts. Some of this as well, right? So
yeah.
I'd blame all four of them equally. I would probably blame
equally.
Maybe not equally. Okay, so I'm gonna.
That's a cowardly answer, though. By the way,
that is a cowardly answer. I'm sorry. I retract my previous statement. I'm gonna lay 50% of the blame to the investors. I'm gonna lay 20% to the analysts. That gets me to 70. 20% to the vendor and 10% to the CISO. I think CISOs, there's always going to be those that buy based on the next magic level of hype.
Yes.
But that number is starting to decline. Like I feel like we're reaching a level in our industry where the leadership has matured enough that the hype is starting to right. So we see like the vendors are increasing the hype machine, like the hype is starting to wear off in its usefulness. So the response naturally is that they increase the level of what crazy hype, which I think that's the opposite effect I was hoping for. But that's how I'd see it. Anybody else?
I think there's a it's interesting to think about how things start. Right. Like if I'm going to create as a vendor, why am I creating as a vendor? Probably because I ran into this problem at a job. Right. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, I can solve this. And, you know, not really realizing, you know, will this solve for everybody or is this solve for my individual use case? But I'm going to create a product to solve this problem. I get the investor to buy into it. Right. But on the CISO side, I'm curious to know, you point out we always have the CISOs that are just going to buy whatever's up in the magic quadrant or whatever analysts say to buy.
No.
But
what's new? Yeah.
But don't ignore the relationship that creates these buying as well. Like how many CISOs are buying products because their friend works at that company for that product. Mm. And I would almost be willing to push that's higher than the number that are just out there buying new products, you know, and then that spirals out because they're like, oh, I'm using this. And they go to their CISO forums and everybody's like, what are you using? I use this. Not full disclosure. You know, my best friend is the one that owns this company and that's why I use it. Like how much of it spreads that way versus, you know, other ways. I mean, investors, they don't know technology. Well, some of them might, but I'm not that involved with investor, but you know, they're just looking for what's going to make money. I mean, how much do they know outside of what the vendor is telling them, saying this is gold versus this is, you know, gold plated silver or something like that.
Or gold plated. What?
The investor problem isn't necessarily solely the investor. So the investor, let's call it 30% of the problem or 40% of the problem. The other 60% of the problem is companies that used to make cell phones or companies that used to make technologies to make VMs operate on top of hardware. And they go out and buy companies that are worthless, that the VC firm went out and spent money on, and then they all make money. Mm-hmm. That's the actual problem. See, the VC firms, while they're an issue because they'll invest in anything, it's the other 60% that actually caused the problem.
But then I think you're already, if you're at the stage of buying companies at that point, somebody already built and named the products and possibly renamed a couple of times, pivoted. So to me, I think you're addressing the blame correctly to the derivative problem. But what about the original problem? Why was I selling DDR or new acronym and not just DLP that works? Why not? Why is because my fear is that we are under blaming the CISOs, because the CISO on that forum that you described, James, a little bit. Let me try to build a quick argument for that. That it's like the traditional thinking is you blame the vendors and sometimes analysts. But I fear that the perception, for example, DLP doesn't work. Like, I feel like there are enough CISOs who believe that DLP doesn't work. So if you are the vendor and you're thinking of a launch in DLP that does work, you're not going to name it DLP, because you're going to go against the conventional wisdom that DLP doesn't work. You're going to come up with crazy acronyms. And if you go and when you talk to an analyst, analyst would be like, oh, I see through this. It's kind of mostly DLP, but yours, I think, is just better. And they say, no, it's not DLP. DLP doesn't work. Everybody knows it. We call ours DDR. We call ours something. So
what does DDR stand for? Because I don't even know.
It's okay. So you weren't paying enough attention to that I say. And the DDR just triggered me because it's a data detection and response. It's an EDR with DLP, basically an unholy alliance, unholy marriage of DLP and EDR into one coherent bundle of annoyance.
I think I know what vendor made that one up.
I actually forgot. So if I'm offending you, dear vendor, I don't mean to offend you personally. I'm just saying that it's an example of an acronym that was coined in my mind to avoid saying DLP.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. We've discovered this is, I think part of this is because we get so sick and tired of firewall. What was wrong with firewalls? We needed next generation firewalls. And so what happens after that? Like next generation? Gen 3 firewalls, 7th generation, N generation. Where do we go with this?
Well, but actually, this is the one example where, for example, I know that Gartner, for sure, this is my impression, have learned from that mistake. Like, to me, again, this is personal, not my ex-analyst. This is like what Anton, the private person, thinks. I think Gartner kind of got taken for a ride by a particular vendor who did force them, who did suggest strongly to use next-gen firewall as a label for market. I feel, again, as a private person, that analysts later on realized it was a mistake, but it was too late. And they've never made the same mistake again. Gartner resisted forcefully against next-gen AV. I fought in these battles. We won. There is no next-gen AV category. So, but I think next-gen analysts are not going to name anything next-gen anymore because of the next-gen firewall, to me, is widely seen as a mistake. It should not have happened.
That's fair enough. So it sounds like universally among the four of us here, we're blaming. There's a good chunk of blame to go to the investors. Why do we have so much money being poured into things that seem to be so obviously flawed before they're out the gate? How does that happen?
Because it's not understood. Mm. If you think about the security space, it's not well understood. You know, if you go to an IT practitioner, you go to, you know, a CEO, you go to a CFO, you go to really anybody inside of a company, cybersecurity is this most misunderstood space. You know, there's malware, there's ransomware, there's all this stuff that scares you to death. And because it's misunderstood, in their mind, there's all of this opportunity. There's so much opportunity to make money. It's just like in quantum computing, when we get into AI and ML, even outside of security, it becomes this ecosystem where there's all this money because it's hard to understand. Now, people don't get that it's just an algorithm and that we've been dealing with algorithms for 30 years. But because of that, it becomes this ecosystem where you can make a tremendous amount of money. And again, you can always get a company that 20 years ago was relevant to go buy it. So you've always got that going for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where does regulation fall into this too? Because, you know, compliance and regulations got to hold a part in this too, because as soon as they come out and say, oh, well, for you to be compliant, you need to have X, Y, and Z. Now, all of a sudden, you got people forced into doing it as well, right? I mean,
no, I don't think that blame. I would love to have a coherent argument while compliance is to blame. But I think the compliance weapon fires too late for the blame to be assigned correctly. Because I think that by the time it's in regs, this battle's already fought and kind of won by somebody. So probably not a single regulation probably mandates EDR, because that still hasn't really percolated into the regs. So I think that compliance is probably less to blame here because of the time delay. That's my impression.
I'm thinking of that as like stuff that's new enough. It hasn't had time to percolate to get to the point where it's in a regulation. But things like SBOM, which are now coming out in cybersecurity directives, that are very new.
Fair point. Yes.
At least for people actually adopting it. I mean, still has very low adoption rates, but now all of a sudden, like supply chain and SBOM and all this is flying off the handle.
That's
right?
Fair.
And so there are times, I would agree, there are a lot of things that they're not meeting, they're not getting into compliance until they've been there for a long time, right? Like you're not seeing next gen type of AV mentionings in a PCI compliance versus just AV.
By anti-malware, yeah. But compliance, I feel like it's a finger on a scale, but mostly of one old tech versus another. Like, for example, of course, SIEM, even SIEM by name, by not mentioned in any regs by the name, but log analysis, log collection, of course, is, right? Maybe even correlation.
Yeah, right.
Jeff's point, yeah.
So, funny enough, apparently people listening to us live are playing bingo. So, yeah. Good job, Jim. Hopefully you got the bingo.
Okay. Since you guys did not know what's DDR, let me try three more acronyms. I'm planning another podcast episode on cloud acronyms, and I'm going to go pick some of my favorites, and let's see if the audience knows what they are and if you know what they are. Of course, the first one is easy. CSPM, everybody knows, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Cloud Security Posture Management, yes.
Yeah, okay, fine. Now it's an easy one. DSPM. Unholy marriage of CSPM and...
DLP.
DLP.
Exactly right. Yes.
Did anybody have that on their bingo card? DSPM. Anyone?
DSPM. Yes. To the data.
I want to come back to that because that does seem like an unholy marriage there.
But we have a whole bunch of the XSPMs. We have DSPM. We have CSPM. We have NSPM. We have the whole list of them.
NSPM.
All.
What's an SPM? I'm going to look it up.
Yeah. What is NSPM?
Network Security Posture Management.
That one you have like a two poster, right?
And ASPM, right? ASPM's out there now.
Yeah, that's right. We had them on the podcast, James.
Yeah, Application Security Posture Management.
Yep. See, they're
all the boys over at Bionic.
Yep.
Even our ex-analyst friend didn't know this.
I did not know about the NSPM. I think I felt like it was like a little early jet aircraft that just like took off, flew 2 feet, and then exploded. So I haven't seen NSPM anywhere. I'm gonna freaking search Gartner now, and if NSPM is even there. So I don't know.
I'm sure they probably invented.
Well, okay,
No, I don't think so.
Well, okay, you had more, Anton. You said
yeah, because I was trying to build the momentum for one of my piece de resistance, the one that I kind of hate. Not hate, but like I was kind of freaked out when it got coined. CNAPP. It's a 5 letters. CNAPP. Of course, PP gives you a hint.
I like CNAPP. That's a good one.
What is that one? I'm afraid to ask.
You should be.
Cloud and network application posture?
No, it's a cloud native application protection.
Oh, that's right. Isn't that what CW?
No, because CWPP, CNAP vendors deposition CWPP vendors as being about infrastructure, while the enlightened, verified crowd of CNAP vendors are about infrastructure and the app, while the CWPP folks are merely about infra, which makes them inferior, obviously, in every way. Okay. I'm being partly funny, partly serious, but okay.
CNAPP.
CNAPP, correct. CNAP.
Yeah, and it usually CSPM and CIEM both fall into CNAP.
Right. Yeah, that's a comment from somebody who's looked at it for too much. Yes, but you're right. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Yes.
CIEM is the interesting one because
the CIEM, because
you say it's SIM or SIEM.
Yeah, correct. And everybody makes you drink another one and then assume you're talking about log analysis, but you're not. You're actually in the cloud identity.
Cloud identity. Yeah.
By the way, you have to explain the other one is SIEM with a C is cloud infrastructure entitlement. Cloud infrastructure entitlement management. So you have to be pretty damn entitled to even know this one.
Well, didn't the NGFW company invent that one?
I have no idea who invented it. I'm trying to pretend CIEM doesn't exist because it pains me.
I think you and everybody else. Unfortunately, this is not like the ghosts under your bed where if you pretend they don't exist and you ignore them, they go away.
You know what? NSPM has an explosive secret. I just discovered it. Do you know? Given that you know what CSPM stands for, do you know what NSPM stands for? That's a really hard question.
Network Security Posture Management?
Nope.
No, I'm guessing.
Nope. It's Network Security Policy Management.
The NSP.
I hate all of you.
I looked it up at Gartner.com. So
is that a big P or a small P? Is that what makes the difference here?
Yes, you're right.
Oh my god!
Is that what we're going to get to? Like upper and lowercase letters are going to help us separate this, so we know what we're talking about.
I think we've just figured out exactly why investment firms are backing up, you know, giant garbage trucks full of money to people, because us as like collectively, we probably have a century in cybersecurity altogether, and we didn't know like half of these ridiculous acronyms. Like, what do these all mean?
Yeah, they thought they pulled up and said DDR, and they're like, oh, memory. Yeah, also I'll put money into memory. Like, we're building that stuff local now. Totally easy to not know exactly what it is you're talking about.
And of course, XDR is the whole monitor colors thing that somebody wisely pointed out when we released the podcast episode on this. Somebody said, oh, you're talking about monitors. Great. Color, something to do with color. I don't know. I.
Yeah, and it's like if you go to the movies, don't they have like XDR?
That's true.
Isn't that like a thing, like a movie theater? Yeah. You go into like the Dolby 2.1 with XDR.
Extreme dynamic range. That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
See, this is why, I mean, it's easy to make fun of people in marketing departments in these companies, but can you imagine being in some new company and they're like, all right, here's what we do. We take this packet and we pull it off the stack. We look at it. We try to find this bit and we put it back on the stack over here. Name it. People are like,
that's ideas. And somebody's like, no, ideas is so 90s. We can't say ideas.
Right. And this is totally different.
Totally different. That's right. And then somebody says, how about NDR? And then somebody says, no, but analyst firm calls it blah. And it's like, well, what do we do?
All Monty Python fans here? Do you guys remember the Monty Python and Life of Brian where they're arguing over the Popular People's Liberation Front
those guys, they're split.
And then they're like arguing over the acronym and all the acronyms basically say the same thing, but they're just the words shuffled around. God, I forgot. I'll have to post the link. I have the If anybody listening has the link, post it in the LinkedIn comments section. It's like Popular People's Front of Judea, Popular Judean People's Front. And then like they were arguing over like which one's which. And they're actually talking about the same thing. But they're like, oh, those bastards, they don't know anything. And the guy's like, no, but we're those guys. Like, oh right. I feel like this is what's happening in security. We've invented so many different ways that are completely different from anything you've ever seen, except it's exactly the same thing you've always seen, with like a different color scrolling bar, or like we moved the scroll bar from the right to the left. Like, a new invention, completely new. You're like, wait a minute, right? Does anybody else feel this way? No, myself here.
Oh, always. It's always.
James, you give me the weirdest look.
It's that mindset of same as it ever was. You know, it's the same exact thing. It's over and over and over. Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. They even made a song about that. And it's just, it's crazy because we rehash the same things over and over and over. And someone creates automation against it. Someone creates ML against it. And then you get into the whole two truths and a lie ecosystem again of, you know, these are the pieces that are actually valid, but oh, by the way, there's 36 things behind it that are invalid, and that's what really creates the issue. And then the other piece that's always tough, and we haven't even hit on this, is most of these platforms in of themselves aren't actually all that bad, but it's when you try to integrate them together. Because at the end of the day, we have to make all these platforms work together. And you know, half of these platforms, or probably even more, 75% of the platforms, you can't ever make them integrate. They won't ever work. You're going to spend millions of dollars on some newfangled widget.
But it's that's like what, Jeff, that's what SOAR is for.
Right, that's exactly.
True. And now XSOAR.
Yep. Take Python, and Python will save every qualm in your life. Let's just take Python and put a web GUI in front of it. That'll fix it all.
That'll fix it all. I feel like we've done this before, but we did it with mainframe, stuck a web browser on the front of it and called it innovation. You're like, no, you don't get
it. You mean a cloud API. By that, you clearly mean a cloud API, but okay. Otherwise, you're right, of course.
You're going to kill me, Anton. Oh, my stomach's getting a good workout out of this.
I remember working on systems that were web apps that were calling into green screens. Like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, thanks for bringing that up, Raf.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. But somebody had to. Look, this is the heart of the issue, because ultimately at the end of the day, we're trying to solve problems, and practitioners are trying to solve problems. Investors are looking for ways to make money. Vendors are looking for ways to sell product and or service, and analysts, frankly, I don't know the motivations of analysts trying to tell people what to do. I don't know.
Right. Help people who are confused about what to do. No, that's fair.
Right. People right. So they're, if you look at ultimately the goals of each one of those four groups, they are completely misaligned. Right. The investor wants to make money on something. Their goal is not to help. They don't care whether it's through a buyout or an acquisition, an IPO or whatever. They don't care if it doesn't solve anything as long as they make money on it. I'm sorry, but that's
fair. Not fair.
At basic economics, right? The analyst wants to be front of mind, and they want to get paid, and they want to, you know, it's a consulting option. So they want to be the house of knowledge, the go-to. The people on the buyer side, they just want to solve problems. Okay, I'm generalizing, obviously, guys, but they just want to solve problems. They don't really care what it's called, and we're frankly probably just sick of all the acronyms. And then the vendors are like, hey, I have an idea. I want to take this idea to market. And then somewhere along the way, I feel like there's, you know, the road to the IPO is paved with good intentions, but ultimately ends up in hell, because you have a good idea. And this is why I'm pretty sure I'm never allowed into Gartner summits anymore. A couple of years back, we were in National Harbor, and there was a bunch of vendors in that expo hall, and there was one company, And I'm standing in front of their booth, and there was nobody there. And a gentleman walks up to me and goes, "What do you think?" And I said, "That's a really cool feature. I'd love to talk to somebody from their company." He's like, "Well, I'm the founder. I'll answer any questions you have." And I said, "Okay, cool. Who are you trying to get bought by?" He goes, he kind of looked at me really confused. Like, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, who are you trying to get by?" He's like, "Well, we have, you know, we're trying to sell to the customer." I go, "Yeah, that's, I get it. There's no customers around. Like, I'm a partner of yours, right? I'm a reseller of yours. Like, who are you trying to get bought by? I know the long, he's like, no. He's like, "Well, I don't think that way." I'm like, "But," and I said the magic words, which I think frankly got him annoyed with me. So I said, "You're a feature. You're a really interesting feature that belongs in a broader product set." I said, "There's like four vendors that could afford you now and that could really use you inside the platform they're building." I said, "But standalone, it doesn't make sense." He got mad. and then I got a call later about harassing vendors. Whatever.
But that's actually another that's you're right, and he's right in the sense that if he wasn't thinking about it, but here's the strange part. It's possible that if he's successful initially, he will broaden. And that's where things become actually more confusing, because that's how you get three features from DLP, one feature from IDS, and a feature from CSPM in one product. Because their clients are pushing him to broaden from one feature. So he now has four features. The problem is four features don't map to any of the markets. And then he calls to my former colleagues and say, who are we? And my former colleagues would say, frankly, we are not sure. You fit more or less in DLP, but also a little bit in EDR and a little bit in this category. We can't quite place you. How do you sell to clients? So it's kind of like
a
turn from analyst court to the vendor so that he can get the client in for like, who is buying you? Are you, for example, in my Gartner days, I would always ask, not who do you compete with, because I get BS answers, but who do you get shortlisted with? My question to a vendor was not who do you compete with, because they pick up random cool vendors they think are cool in their little minds and name them. But who do you get shortlisted with implies a customer puts you on the list with vendors X and Y, so at least they're seen as solving a similar problem. So this trick question I've used a lot on vendors to elicit who is the real, what the buyer is buying when they buy them.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I think you get that scope keep too, right? You know, vendor has some sort of product. The buyer, who doesn't really do a lot of analysis to know what they're looking for, they just see something and say, "Oh, I see you've got this. Yep, that's on my list of things I need." They go there, and then all of a sudden it starts, "Well, hey, can you do this as well? Like, this is really great, but it'd be great if you could do X, Y, Z." All right, and then they start building that up. I mean, I had a similar – they didn't get super upset with me, Raph, but I mean, I was talking to a vendor looking at their product one time, and I was like, "I mean, this looks great, but – you know, I mean, you really need this, this, and this for this to be worthwhile for what I'm looking for."
Yeah.
You know, like you're like 80% there, but there's a whole bunch I'm missing that really is kind of a no-go for me on this, you know, but so you've got the analysts that are out of touch necessarily, but they're not in doing the day-to-day work that normal people are doing. So the purchase, they're not working the same way the purchasers are working.
Yeah.
Enough. So it's a whole issue of this group doesn't know what they really want. This group doesn't know really what the people that need it are doing. And the people selling it are like, "Hey, you know what? This was a cool feature we wanted to build. Let's see if we can figure out a way to sell this."
Yep.
And usually that means, "Oh, somebody said this." I remember working at a software company where I swear we'd get direction in the morning. And then after lunch, the CEO would have gotten a call from somebody. He'd be like, "All right, here's where I want us to do it. We need to add this feature because this person said they might buy it if we add," you know, and it would change like daily.
Yep.
You know, and so there's a huge confrontation going on there of what really is needed.
Hey, Jeff, I want to pose this to you because you've been quiet, but I know you've got a metric ton of experience in starting things up space. How do you look, I think the smart ones that start companies and start things look for what's the solution, what's the problem that we're trying to solve, and work out from there. But how do you determine like what space you're thing that you're starting up the startup that you're starting, like, how do you determine what space it's going to compete in, what the totality of features is? Give me the process, because I'm kind of curious now.
Well, I think if you want to be successful, the process is you find a gap in the market, you build a technology around it, and you go build a company around that individualized gap. What we see oftentimes, though, is we don't see that space. So we see the P.T. Barnum effect, which is you go out and you create a technology, or you create a like technology, but you put lipstick on the pig and you go out and you get people excited about it. And that's the reality of what we see today. And so there's a whole multitude of ecosystems that exist. The other thing that's always interesting is that there's a lot of people who go out and they create a solution that has a gap, but it really shouldn't have a gap. And we see this today all the time. It's because people, you know, you take cloud workloads. People will go and deploy cloud workloads that are monolithic. Well, you probably shouldn't be doing that. Let's just be honest. And there's all these technologies that now exist to orchestrate, deploy, protect, secure, build compliance regimes around X, Y, and Z, all around a monolithic workload that's running on top of a cloud provider. Well, you know,
that in theory shouldn't exist, right?
Correct.
That in theory shouldn't exist.
It didn't exist. It's like when they built the Yugo in the United States. It was a car that should have never existed in the United States. You know, the Zil from Russia didn't exist in the United States. So why do the Yugoslavians think they can sell a Yugo car?
Yeah.
But they did it.
Fair enough. Okay, interesting. Hey, before we run out of time, you guys, we've been kind of bagging on it. So let me flip this around to the part that I think is valuable here. What industry has actually surprised you, or what market segment has surprised you with where you kind of went, oh, this is going to be nonsense, and it actually delivered?
CASB.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, he didn't even think of that. That was like instant.
Yeah. It's very clear, because I remember that moment at Gartner when I was like, brokers, what is this crap? And it's like in 3 years, they're like, by the way, this is the fastest growing market in the industry in the history of security markets up to some point in terms of like raw purchases and deployments. So yeah, for me, it was like an instant answer. Yeah. I was the not skeptic, but like, I was like, what the hell is this thing? It makes no sense.
Where does it go from here, broker? Where does CASB go today? Because there's a couple of SaaS players in it.
You secure all the SaaS applications. You detect them. You discover them. You filter. You secure. You improve. I mean, there's a long list of capabilities at this point. But in the beginning, it was kind of like a weird thing, like an odd duck, odd name. Name doesn't really match other security names, and it's like it's kind of a broker of some sort, and so. To me, that was like the obvious choice, as you know, just me say right away. So,
but I think
because it's funny, I've got the Netskope folks on coming on the show to talk about that. Maybe I'll drag you back into that one, Anton, because they might be. I'm sure they're doing a happy dance right now with you being a fan.
They don't want me to attend that session. That one,
I don't think,
because just like Anton believes fully in CASB. I think CASB for CASB's sake is a great technology. For securing a SaaS application, for ensuring that data doesn't move into a SaaS application, data doesn't get pulled down, i.e., et cetera, the broker concept's great. The problem is that marketing teams within CASB organizations have created this as a Swiss Army knife of all security. And so this Swiss Army knife magically not only protects your SaaS applications, it protects all of your cloud workloads, all of them. You can deploy a cloud workload as a database. It magically protects that. It magically protects everything in your entire ecosystem. And oh, by the way, if you want to protect everything on premise, just flip the CASB around and you'll protect it all there too. That's the part that's...
Oh, that's nasty. There is abuse of CASB pretty heavy at that. Like it doesn't do that.
It doesn't do that. But we see customers...
It does not do that at all.
Correct.
So Jeff, Mirzet just joined and says, I'm from former Yugoslavia and I just joined. Yugo is like jQuery. It should never have been built. The look on Anton's face is priceless.
Yeah, I was like, but actually, this your take, I never actually, I think we agree about the Casby actually, Jeff, because I feel like it went through the marketing, like the Casby balloon was growing pretty quickly, but then marketing got a big pipe and like expanded it even more. So that, oh, by the way, Casby can secure IIS. Mostly no. Well, not well. Casby can secure, well, on-premise? Really? No, that's just crazy. Or Casby can secure every SaaS app they've never seen. Not deeply. And so like there's a core that's solid and valuable, but there's a fluff around and it's a pretty big fluff area. So you're right, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
James, your turn.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything that jumps out as me as wow, that was super.
I'm gonna play contrarian here to Anton for a second. I know how deeply flawed this sector is right now, but I'm really hopeful about XDR. I'm hoping that somewhere out of the Anton has collapsed.
If anybody should be ducking, it's probably Raph, hoping Anton doesn't throw something at him.
Oh, that was good maneuver. But I feel like that is one of those most market segments like that. It takes a while. It takes at least a little while for the marketing people to come in and fully saturate and completely overrun it and make it nonsense. I feel like.
But that's XDR nonsense from day one. There. We started it.
Right. I feel like XDR started there.
That's a good thing.
Right. So now we have no place to go but up. Like literally, okay. We started with complete nonsense. And at some point, somebody's going to look at that. And maybe it's a self-serving comment because I'm actually interested in doing this in a little confederation I'm working on. But I think that a lot of companies say XDR. What they really mean is better SOC. When I think about XDR, and I'm thinking about your SOC triad, right? Mm-hmm. The endpoint, the network, and the Fox analytics.
Network. Yep, great.
Right? Getting It's additional context. It's data from different locations. It's the ability to not have to. And this is, you know, I talk about the alt tab swivel chair problem all the time. And it's the, it provides, there is hope in that technology space for me to not have to go alt tab, alt tab, alt tab, okay, copy, paste, alt tab, alt tab, alt tab, copy, alt tab, alt tab, alt tab, paste, enter, run query, okay, paste it over here. Like, if we're still doing that kind of security, and I can tell you lots of SOCs still are, you're losing every single day all day, right? This is why when I first had SOAR introduced to me, I was like, wait, so there is now going to be the interconnectedness of products that don't work together. So you're going to create a scripting language version of connected tissues. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Why didn't that happen natively? And for a million different reasons. But what it turned into, what SOAR really turned into is context pulling, right? Mm-hmm. Like SOX turned that because you would get a piece of data or an alert and that would fire off the SOAR platform to go pull data from these other things to give it context. So you could actually look at something that had more than just a single alert with no context to it. I feel like XDR is going to, once we pull the, pardon my French folks, pull the bullshit off the stack, like we're going to find out that may be the only viable, in whatever we call it at that point, right? I don't care what we call it, you know, advanced MDR, XDR, OMGDR, I don't know. But I feel like where we go with it is going to ultimately decide how, because the SOC today, you've got the people problem. So we can't hire and staff enough people because you can't retain them. You've got the resources problem. We don't have an economy that's performing really well right now, right? And so companies looking at their budgets and going, okay, I've got a bunch of tools and I've got two people to operate them. They'll have to figure it out. Like the technology will do it. It's like, no, it's not.
I mean, you know what? You almost made me kind of maybe not like you. I don't know. That's a high bar. But I agree with much of what you said, frankly. And I think that maybe it's the triangle of visibility. That's what they did it. But
I have this recorded. Yeah, I have this recorded.
If XDR is the if XDR eventually will get debullshitted, I don't know, debullshitted down to the modern visibility stack for the future, I buy that. I take that. I mean, there's no, I'm not going to make any snide remarks about XDR in this case.
One, I think,
but I think it is going to, sorry, Jeff, I think it's going to take a lot of that's not the word I want to use. I was gonna say defluffing, but that doesn't sound like a good word. Defluffing. Like it's gonna take a lot of taking the quills off the porcupine before we get to the beast to make it.
Defluffing is, by the way, the word. Definitely, there is a word called defluffing, so we can say defluffing.
I think he means is we got to boil it down to its root.
That's right. That's yeah. Right. All right, Jeff, save me.
So I think
say what you were going to say.
I think in Raf's comment, I think there's a lot of value here because if you think about the way applications are going and you think about the way infrastructure is moving, you know, we're moving much more into a horizontally defined ecosystem. And that is stressing the current security paradigms that are out there. And Raf's point, I think, is actually really valid. Will XDR look like it does today in 5 years? Certainly not. Going to look drastically different. But the construct of having security directly at an endpoint, an application, a service, so on and so forth, that's really where the industry has to go. Because centralized security tools will no longer have inspection points. The construct of being able to decrypt SSL in tomorrow's applications just doesn't work. I mean, as we go more and more into application-centric infrastructures, functional infrastructures, things like that, our security paradigms change. And I think, you know, that mindset around XDR is really what's going to drive it. And it becomes an ecosystem that gives us a lot of intelligence. You know, we get intelligence directly at services. We get insight directly at the kernel because the kernel is still really important within these ecosystems. And so I think there's actually a lot of value and a lot of play. And I think the industry will change a lot. Now, the technologies that we have today have to evolve drastically because the way that most XDR tool sets work, they won't find and they won't be able to catch these issues. Some of them are starting to get there. We're watching some of the vendors start to support containers in a much better format. Starting to support containers directly down to an endpoint level. Think of a laptop or a desktop, those types of things. And we're starting to see that whole ecosystem work. So there are some options there and there are some plays there that I think will help the industry. So I do agree with Raf, and that is coming from me in the realm of Raf is a Blackhawks fan, so none of us can think that much great about him. But with this, he did come up well with one thing in this episode.
I'll take it. Oh. Look, I think Jeff, I think you're right. So what got me started on this and where I think I pivoted from my previous line of thinking was an organization that I was talking to that is about 60% Google Chrome on the laptop.
Mm-hmm. And what do you mean? So what, there's the 40 don't use computers or what? Like,
The rest of them are like Mac and Mac Windows.
Oh, and yeah. Oh, so Chromebook, not Chrome browser. Okay, got it. Yeah.
Yeah, Chromebook. Sorry, Chromebook. And so their IT, their security department, and by the way, the Chromebook side came from an acquisition. Okay, so before they all had vendor, EDR vendor X. And then they acquired this company, and now suddenly they have a bunch of Chromebooks. Like, hey, how do we do... where do we put the agent?
Do this is like the 1990s thinking in counters 2020s tech.
Right. Again, I totally agree. And so it's a point where for me it was a point where I was like, well, because we're still installing agents everywhere, guys. Like even in cloud environments, we're still installing agents to do various things. And so For reasons that sometimes the non-agent version is less rich or poorly defined or poorly implemented or poorly supported or incredibly insanely priced or all the above, for example, on certain clouds. But as long as that 90s era tech still works in some capacity on new environments, we're going to push it along and call it good enough. And it isn't, right? Which, and I think this is where I think the XDR concept, not in execution today, but the concept gives us hope for what, how do we think about it next? Because it may just be down to analysis of telemetry from each of these devices. It's not necessarily an agent anymore, right? It's output of signals off of your Chromebook about processes and memory usage and stuff like that that we use to detect badness, not necessarily the, you know, Acme endpoint agent. Does that make sense?
Yes. But then you're talking about the XDR vision, by the way, that gets severed from its EDR roots, right?
Correct.
Because this requires that an XDR definition that wins gets cut off from the EDR roots, and it's not a certain.
Yes. It's not an evolution. So yeah, it's not the progression. It's an entirely new tree growing. It's not another branch or not another fork. It's an entirely new. Like, that's the problem. I think it's named poorly because the name implies the evolution of MDR,
so?
EDR.
he thinks XDR is named poorly. How about that? Who would have thought that?
But because it does imply some level of linearity from previous generations of blank DR, and it's not. It should be an evolution rather than. It should be a complete revolution rather than evolution. I don't know. Maybe I don't even know what I'm talking about, but that's where my head's at, guys. All right. Final closing thoughts. What do you guys, cause we're going to do this again. But next time I want to talk about, CDR and cloud related things.
Yay.
Same group, by the way, you and you, same people. We're going to have this conversation. I feel like this is a fun group. I want to do this again and again. But all right, so we've gone through the bad. We've talked through some potential wins. What do you guys want to leave people with, James? I'll start with you.
There's
final thoughts.
There's tons of stuff going on out there. I think, like I started at the beginning, you know, it's all about identifying what it is that you need within your organization to be able to find the components that are going to match that. I think that's the biggest thing for anybody listening. I think that's your big thing, is understand what you're looking for and then go out and match that. Don't try to find something that's sort of close and try to wiggle it to what you need. Identify what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Can I be just a wimp and basically just like steal his comment? Because I was preparing my own version of that largely said the same, that just like overly marketed product is not automatically great, it's also not automatically bad. You need to be very clear about what you need, your use cases, your requirements, and then you may see a product that's wildly overmarketed in a different area, but once you understand it, once you trialed it, once you spoke to an analyst, once you did other stuff, you realize it's a match, so you buy it. You don't really you don't get taken by marketing, but you don't ignore the marketing. You really figure out what your needs and use cases are, and you buy that. So pretty much what James said, but just like Verdi.
Jeff?
I detract from them. My detraction is that...
Shocking.
So here's my belief, and Raf hears this all the time. The reality is, for all of us that exist within the security space, we all have to continue to focus on outcomes. Our businesses are driving outcomes. They're trying to change the dynamic of the business. They're trying to grow. They're trying to evolve the business. They're trying to do all those types of things. And every one of these security tools, at the end of the day, is just a tool. That's all it is. And all of us know what tools are. So we should probably avoid tools. And so because of that, you know, we need to continuously think about that, and we need to continuously evolve that. And the story that both James and Anton had is certainly relevant, but we have to align it with the outcome itself and really start pushing businesses forward, because no longer is security a cost center with an organization. Security has to continue to evolve, it has to continue to push. And with today's world of really what's going on holistically, we have to be a value driver. And that's really kind of the big piece here. And if we think about those outcomes, we take these tool sets, we integrate them together, we tie them together, and we actually drive outcomes, we can do that holistically together. So that's what I leave it with. And the NGFW won't solve all things. So if you're thinking that, that's
an idea.
I'm kind of stuck on James wanting to wiggle it just a little bit, but come on. Speaking of 90s. All right, moving on. All right. This has been a great conversation, guys. I think we laughed, we cried, and we joked, but I think the reality is that there is goodness in between the madness. Unfortunately, I think as buyers, as users of the platforms and the tools, sometimes you got to work a lot harder than you should to see past the smoke and mirrors, the craziness, the hype. And you know, we've identified some folks to blame, but nobody's going to, I don't think anybody's going to solve that for you. I don't think the marketing engines, I don't think the analysts, I don't think the VCs, I don't think the companies are going to tone down any of this anytime soon. So it ultimately comes down to you, like what, you know, James and Anton said, figure out what problem you're trying to solve, do your own homework on it. Obviously it, you know, use, others' research and opinions as you see fit, but don't discount or automatically, completely, use somebody else's hype machine to make decisions. Yeah. And I think that's pretty sound advice. So on that, we're going to end. Mr. Jeff Collins, thank you for being on the show. Mr. Anton Chivakin, the recovering analyst, and James, my partner in crime here. And for myself, thanks for listening, you guys. We will catch you another time, another place on another Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast. We will do this again. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
As we fade out on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole episode, we'd like to encourage you to chat with our hosts and guests using the Twitter hashtag #DTSR. Please check out the show notes, catch up on any episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. So on behalf of Rafal, James, for now it's goodbye. We'll see you soon on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast.